Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Double Shelix. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Sally. And today we are super excited to be talking about stress with your good friend and mine, Dr. Emily Lingemann, PhD. Emily, welcome to Double Shelix.
Thanks for having me. Emily is a recent PhD. Can I still say that? Are you still, do you consider yourself a recent PhD?
No, it's been 2 years.
She just spent a lot less time in grad school than we did.
Yes, congrats on that. We're going to specifically focus in this episode on the slump. Listeners, I don't know if you have gotten to the slump, if you have experienced it, if you have friends who have experienced it, if you've even heard of this phenomenon, but maybe we could start by just describing what is the slump.
Definitely. So for me, the slump hit hard during third and fourth year. A lot of grad students face it. You know, you found your lab during your first year and you focused on quals, then following that normally in your second year. And after that, you hit this slump because now the end of grad school feels so far away when you're a third and fourth year grad student. And the pressure to produce research and quality experiments that have clear and meaningful outcomes is really high, but the goals are often ambiguous. And, you know, the end, as we talked about, is so far away that it's hard to know that you're making progress during the third and fourth year. So that's why I became so interested in stress, because for me, these were pretty hard years. And I know that a lot of grad students feel the same way. So today we can talk about that, and hopefully everyone will have some practical tips at the end of this podcast.
And I would say the slump, obviously people talk about like the third year slump or like the nth year slump, because there can be ups and downs in any grad school experience. But I think the slump also would apply to anyone like outside of graduate school, like during your postdoc or even as a faculty member or in your non-academic job where you've been there a while and things are happening, but are they really happening and not as quickly as you want? And like, I think what Emily mentioned about ambiguous goals and unclear future, like that's, I think, a huge contributor to the slump. Emily, can you talk about like the internal factors of how you felt when you were kind of experiencing these like super lows of grad school?
Definitely. So I felt like, so none of my experiments were working, or at least majority of them. And I felt like nothing I was doing was good enough. And I have really high expectations, as most people who are in PhD programs do. They have high expectations for themselves to succeed, and they've had a lot of academic success up until that point. And so for me, there was a lot of internal pressure to do well, to succeed, and to make progress. And so I felt like I wasn't doing a good enough job, and I wasn't super confident that I was going to be able to get a high quality paper. And so all of that created this stress that I felt. It was really, a lot of it was internal. I had a supportive PI as well as dissertation committee. They were great, but I think like a lot of grad students, we have high expectations for ourselves, and that can lead to stress.
When did you experience this, and how long did it last?
For me, it was like, I like how we're calling it the third and fourth year slump, because I felt like it was like most of third and fourth year. And nearing the end of the fourth year, a story on my research was starting to come together, and I was more able to see kind of the pathway to the finish line of the PhD, but it lasted for much of third and fourth year. And ultimately it spilled out into other areas of my life beyond just research, because I like kind of had a bad attitude. I was pretty negative in other areas of my life. And I also didn't do a great job of creating a life outside of grad school as well. And also living with other grad students at the time as roommates, other people were experiencing the same thing, and that only fed on each other. So while it was great to have them as a support to commiserate with. Sometimes that was also a challenge because my only support system was really primarily other graduate students.
What are some symptoms of the slump? How would a student know that they might be in the midst of one?
Or if you worked in with other students or supporting students, how can you identify this in other people and know when you might be in a position to step in and provide additional support?
That's a great question. So first taking it how to know if you're in it and then how to identify it. But if we think first how to know you're in it, it's kind of just a feeling that grad school never end. I think that's a feeling that a lot of grad students have, and that's the telltale sign you're in the slump, and it will never end, and in a way that you're not loving grad school at that moment and not appreciating all the benefits that come with being a grad student. And I think as someone who supports or works with grad students, just realizing that this does happen to a lot of graduate students, especially during the third and fourth year. And so if students are being really hard on themselves or getting really down about their experiments not working, that's a sign that they might end up in their own slump at that time. And now being a step removed from graduate school, and a lot of professors probably realize this, that this is kind of a normal part of being a grad student. But when it's when you're going through grad school, you don't have that great perspective of realizing that this is kind of just the normal path that people take. And so as someone who supports or works with graduate students, you can help them and just be you're not alone. This is a normal part of grad school.
Yeah. And I feel another thing that happened to me when I was experiencing slump, and I think a lot of other students, is you can kind of get into these cycles of well, the experiment that I did didn't work. And not only did it not give me the data I wanted, but it didn't give me kind of any data that I can interpret in any useful way. And so it advanced my future exactly by zero. So tomorrow I could try the same thing again, or I could do nothing. So why would I do anything? Because if I do something, it's like having done nothing. So might as well do nothing. And there can be not only these cycles where stress decreases motivation, but also where doing something has no outcome that I can discern in any way. So might as well not do anything. And that can also be, I notice this in a lot of other students, including myself at times, where that's another very vicious cycle.
You get a really bad attitude about the whole process, and you lose all the science magic that attracted you there in the first place. I've also seen or experienced people are more irritated, or maybe you are having a hard time sleeping.
Well, Emily said, it affects not just lab, but also friendships, relationships, not doing things that you love because you're in lab instead. So one of the reasons why I was really, Kayla and I knew we wanted to talk about stress on the podcast. And one reason that I thought to have Emily as a guest is because Emily and I used to be roommates for the first 2 years of graduate school. And what I do back up what she's saying, that she used to be a very high stress person. But I think the high stress of first year Emily Lingeman versus management consultant career extraordinaire now Emily Lingeman, I really see huge differences. So Emily, what is the secret? What is your secret? How do you use your anti-stress techniques and learnings specifically to overcome the slump, but also how to think about stress in general, especially as it relates to our studies and our careers?
Absolutely. So first, just taking a step back, and I think it's important to have perspective. And this was something that I lost, especially as a first year grad student, and even during third and fourth years, just having perspective that things don't last forever and everything is really only temporary. And that's easier to see now because looking back at grad school, I see a lot more benefits from graduate school that I wasn't appreciating at the time. And that's such a classic cliche almost, but it's really true. There are parts of grad school that I took for granted and I wish I could have enjoyed a bit more along the way. So first is really just having that perspective that nothing lasts forever. Graduate school doesn't last forever. No step in your career lasts forever, and it's always changing. So that's important to keep in mind when times get hard, but also when times are good, enjoying all the good aspects, knowing that it doesn't last forever. I would also add that, you know, it's important to have a life outside of graduate school. I alluded to this earlier, but that was one thing that I didn't do a great job of doing. I went to lab, worked really hard, came home and talked to other graduate students, and even on the weekends spent a significant amount of time in lab, which of course, depending on what field you're in, may be necessary just to keep your experiments going. But I could have been a lot less stressed had I developed more of a life outside of lab. I had a few hobbies like hiking, camping, but I didn't make a point of doing them very regularly. And so I think it's important to have just an outlet outside of work, you know, outside of research that can keep you grounded throughout school.
To add to that, one thing that I have found very helpful is to set aside some hours of the weekend, a whole day, like depending on how bad of a week it's been, the whole weekend, where I don't try to solve problems, work problems included, but also like just don't try to solve any problems for at least these 6 hours. That helps give me some perspective.
I love that a lot. And I think it's important to, like, building on that, giving yourself permission to have downtime. As a graduate student, I always felt like I should be working. And so when I would watch Netflix or when I would do things that weren't, quote, like productive, at times I would feel guilty about that. But it's actually really important to have that time to allow your brain to turn off and not solve problems, exactly as you were saying, Kayla. So setting aside time to literally have downtime is really important and another part of handling stress along the way.
And I think in every conversation about graduate school where the advice is you guys have to get hobbies and friends and spend time outside of graduate school, my heart always goes out to people in sort of toxic mentorship or toxic peership situations where distance from the lab, whether temporal or physical, is not tolerated. You know, like if you're not in like the PI that comes in every Saturday or the lab mates who judge you for leaving before 9 p.m., that kind of bullshit. Which that is bullshit, don't get me wrong. What thoughts do we have for students or trainees in those kinds of situations? Because I definitely have friends who had to say they were going to a doctor's appointment in order to call their grandma, kind of thing. This is real. So any advice or like, besides that our heart goes out to these students, any thoughts for people in that really, really dire situation?
So for students in that lab, I would really think about if there's other professors or people within the department who you can lean on for support, because that is almost a toxic work environment. There is more than just getting a hobby to really address and solve that problem. So finding other leaders within the university who can help support you and your lab during that time is really going to be the best route, because that's not going to be an environment that anyone can sustain themselves in for a long period of time.
Yeah, it's what I call the get other adults in the room kind of approach. Yeah. So if you're in that situation and you feel like you truly cannot, you know, go for a run, that's fine. And also one of our past guests brought up on a similar point, like she said that she was in not a same situation, but you can do hobbies during the day and sometimes people don't notice. Like if you really have to be in lab until 9 p.m., like go to the rock climbing gym at 3 and people will think that you're in tissue culture. You know, that's so you great. Can kind of work the system to a certain extent.
Some of the items that could be stressful when you're in the middle of the slump may be addressable. So you talked about, like, we kind of talked about toxic mentorship as an example. Like, that's something that you could potentially get support for that might be better than, say, just taking time for yourself. I just looking at some of the the notes that we jotted down, I wonder how many of these could be addressable and how you balance that with sort of, this is the normal wear and tear of graduate school. Like sometimes things don't work. And especially with respect to perhaps the common theme of worrying about the future.
So I don't think the stresses will entirely go away ever. Unfortunately, there is no magic solution, and our brains are wired to think about the future. They're wired to keep us safe, right? So that's where our stress is oftentimes coming from. So exactly to your point, like there are maybe structural problems in your lab that may be causing the stress, such as a more toxic mentor. And there, as Sally said, like it's really about getting other adults in the room. But a lot of it is internal pressure, internal stress we are creating from worrying about our future, worrying about jobs, thinking that we're not doing a good enough job, or even just it can come from comparing ourselves to someone else in our grad school cohort who like already published a great paper, and then you feel terrible that your experiments are still failing. And that's when it is important to have that perspective that this won't last forever, and everyone does finish their PhD and leave one way or another. It does happen, even if it feels far away. And then kind of creating that life outside of grad school and developing healthy habits as much as you can, you know, with exercising or thinking about meditation or just getting more movement in your life through walks or exercise, as I mentioned, are healthy ways to handle that stress.
I'm so glad that you mentioned the paper example, because I feel like every person has experienced this at some point.
Right. And like, it's just a question of like, if the person, like, did they have a cell paper after 6 months, or they had a science paper after 2 years, and you're just like, I had no papers after 5 years, and now what, you know? So it's just like, I think we talked about this in a past episode on imposter syndrome, and comparing yourself to peers is one of, at least for me, one of the most difficult forms of those kinds of feelings, because, you know, your peers can also be your friends. And so you're so happy for them, but also like, where's your cell paper? And unlike, you know, the feelings of, you know, someone that you meet at a conference, like they're your friend and you see them every day. And I think comparison is the enemy of joy. So, and also different people have different goals. Once I realized that, like, I was comparing myself to people that like want to be a professor at MIT, and I have like no desire to do that. So my goals need to be different, and what I'm working for is different. And that's why they don't have a podcast. Easier said than done, but it was a lot of thinking to get to this point. So if you're not there yet, it's okay. Emily, I love what you were saying before, my little random tangent, about like movement and meditation and breaks. Can you talk a little bit more about other ways to think about stress? Like when you identify, like when you can self-reflect and say, this is a very stressful time. What am I doing, and how can I be addressing this in a more productive way?
Absolutely. So what most people do when they feel stress is they either resist it, react to it, or avoid it. So I can talk about these. So resisting stress is kind of just like pushing through it. And I think we've all been there where you just feel stressed out, but you're like, there's too much to do. There's too many experiments. You just push through it and you keep working. That's resisting stress. And the stress doesn't go away. Like it's still there the whole time you're trying to push through it. Then there's reacting to stress. So this is when you take stress out on someone in your life. So maybe you come home and you kind of are snappy or short with your partner or roommate. Like that's kind of reacting to stress, where you're taking it out on someone else around you. Or there's avoiding stress. And this is my personal favorite unhealthy way to deal with stress. But this is like eating like salty or sweet snacks, or like almost like having a drink is one way that people deal with stress that's not healthy. That's avoiding it, where you're just trying to cover up the feeling of stress by making yourself feel better with some other way. For me personally, I'm from Wisconsin. I really like ice cream. And so my favorite way to unhealthily deal with stress was to eat ice cream as a way of kind of like avoiding the stress. But ultimately, if you're resisting stress, reacting, or avoiding, the stress doesn't go away. It's still there. And so that's when you can think about incorporating healthier habits and healthier ways of dealing with the stress, such as exercising, going for walks, meditation, if that's something you want to try, or just building in breaks into your workday, or taking that downtime for yourself to watch Netflix in the evenings. Like, those can be healthier ways to handle the stress.
Is all stress bad?
No, not necessarily. I mean, like, stress is a natural part of like being a human. We will never have zero stress, and it's not a problem that stress is there. But I understand that from my own experience during third and fourth year, you can apply a lot of extra stress to yourself that isn't useful, right? So we know, we've all had, like, you know, experiences where there's a lot of stress and it becomes unhelpful at that point. And so that's when we can think about how to handle the stress.
Emily, do you want to talk a little bit about your strategies that you use now to kind of plan out your work week and use that as a way to set boundaries and sort of avoid those stressful moments, like especially in the evenings when you feel drawn toward work, but also are done working?
Yeah. So what I do now is I take a pretty deliberate approach to planning what I need to get done each week. And so typically on Sundays, but sometimes late Friday afternoons, I'll think about all the things I want to get done next week and when I'm going to do them. Like Monday morning from like 11 to 1, I'm going to do this. And Tuesday's afternoon, I'm going to do this other thing. And I make a tentative plan. Of course, things come up and things change, but I like to plan out what I want to accomplish each day and kind of work back from deadlines or other things that are coming up. So I can like work backwards and plan things out so that nothing is getting put off to the last minute. And then with that, as Kayla was saying earlier, trying to set boundaries and trying to think about, okay, what time do I want to stop checking emails this night? Like, what is going to be my cutoff time each week? And recognizing that at times I have to be flexible when things come up, but by planning out my schedule well in advance and knowing what I want to get done each day, I can also think about what time I want to log on and start working and what time I want to stop working each day. So it's helpful to kind of set those boundaries for myself in advance.
So Emily, how did the slump end for you? Do you remember a turning point? Did it just fade away?
Yes, the slump mainly just faded away. There was no like one day where I was like, I feel great now, the slump is over. I wish I had that kind of story, but I think over time, I was able to deal with my stress better and better. I was able to build my confidence in my work along the way as really experiments started working. And so I started to feel like, okay, this is coming together for a good story. And I know I can ultimately like see the end of grad school more and more. So that's primarily how I got out of the slump. It's kind of like a roller coaster ride for me to get out of it. And once you're finishing, or probably once you're entering the last year of grad school, or you might be able to identify that, okay, I feel better. There's a plan to get out. There's a plan to finish this story. And I'm starting to think about and have a clear sense of what type of career and job I want next. So everyone does make it out of this slump eventually.
I think one of the point you made here really resonates with me, because I think that has been a common theme that I've seen, which is that at the point that you have a plan for how it's going to end, whether that's wrapping up your paper, whether that's passing the work on, whether that's getting a job or just looking for a job or whatever it is. Like, that's the point where you see progress happening and it starts to get better. But it's hard to, I think when you're in the slump, it's hard to believe that that day will come.
Yeah. And I would say for me, I would say when I was in the slump, the times when I felt better about it were when I had conferences upcoming, honestly, because it's like, I'm having a conference, like, I know I need XYZ data for my poster or for my presentation. And so there's like some sort of deadline besides just my dissertation that I have sort of accountability. Plus then, like, you have something to look forward to, like, I can go to Switzerland and go to this amazing conference. And it's something that you can look forward to, like, you do all the work, and then there's a prize at the end. So that was always very meaningful to me. And those, like, work in lead up to conferences always felt very productive and valuable. And then for me, I feel like there kind of was an almost switch flip moment in terms of ending the slump, which for me, like, lasted for like way longer than just third and fourth year. But it was when I finally started scheduling my animal studies, because there was all this work to prepare the material. And there was all of this, like, you can always do infinite benchtop studies. And like, when do you pull the trigger and go into the animal model? And it was so stressful. And even though once I started the animal studies, like, frankly, that was still very stressful. Like, getting all my material synthesized fresh before each study was a ton of work. I was pregnant and I was working on synthesis so hard and I was exhausted constantly. And it was like a very stressful time, but it was way better than the stress in the slump where I'm like, doing another synthesis. Well, it'll probably oxidize before I ever have time to use it, but I gotta do it. So that's cool. You know, like the work at the end of my PhD, which was very focused toward these animal studies, was night and day better than from the middle of my PhD, even though ultimately, like, spoiler alert, all my animals in the animal study, like, there was no effect of the treatment on their viability. So that's like kind of failed animal study. And I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to get a job because I failed an animal study. It turns out, I talked about this in many job interviews, interviewers love learning about what you learned from a failed experiment, and they didn't care at all that my experiment didn't have the expected result. They were like, wow, that's a very interesting study. Like, who would have thought that would have happened? And I'm like, not me. Otherwise, I would have not done the experiment. Anyway, this is just to say, like, if you're in the slump, look for small wins along the way. Even like publishing a review paper that's only been cited 4 times, like, that was still very exciting when I was in the slump to have like these small wins, like review papers and conferences before the like final slump end of actually getting toward the end of your PhD. Because no matter how many times I heard from older successful students, like, don't worry, by the end, it all comes together. Like, what? You can't take that to the bank. Like, that's kind of meaningless, even though that's what we're telling you, listener. Like, when I heard this advice, I thought it was meaningless. Because it doesn't feel like it's going to come together to you for you because you're worse than everyone else. I mean, that's how you think in the moment, but you're not. But yeah, I very much was there as well. And I guess all I could say is that you will graduate and it will be fine. But when I heard that, I didn't believe it.
Well, and you touched on another great point, which is actually celebrating your small wins. We're not very good at that in general. We as in general grad students, trainees, scientists. And I guess we have we only have an end of three, but we do have very different jobs. And to the job point, I mean, is it fair for me? Would you guys agree if I said you don't really have to worry about finding your job until the last year?
So I think it depends. So I like interviewed for my job a year before I started. Okay. So I was prepping in fourth year, but I think we can tell people you don't need to worry about it. But I think that, like, that's hard advice. I don't know. Like, I was thinking about it the whole time, right?
It's part of the abyss that is stressful because you don't really know when to start worrying about it. So you just worry about it all the time. And it's not really clear for like different job types. Like I think the industry job search it seems like that does happen closer to the time that you're graduating, whereas like postdoc job search is like 9 months, 6 months in advance, and clearly consulting is a year in advance. So
yeah. So for that, I would say it's like if you're just worrying about finding a job, that's not helpful. So if you find yourself having anxiety about the job hunt, don't worry, just do something. And it can be very easy to take small steps, like on the order of 2 hours of your time per month, like cold interviewing someone or like reading some articles about management consulting, or not cold interviewing, but like coffee chatting, doing a coffee chat with someone, or these very small steps that can help you feel like you're going in the right direction and alleviate some of that anxiety. Because worrying about something, that's a spiral. So just do one small thing can often be better than like trying to create a whole career search plan, TM, but stressing about creating the plan. Just do one or two small things per month. I think that's a great way for students in the middle of their PhD to feel like there is a light at the end of the tunnel and help them identify what that might look like without like creating more stress for themselves by feeling like they have to be perfect at having a plan for finding the perfect job.
Yeah. And a lot of universities have career seminars or some sort of career programming for PhDs to help them figure out what they want to do. So during your third and fourth year slump, that's the perfect time to attend those, just to think about what you want to do and even to maybe cross some career options off the list. If you go to a seminar and they don't sound interesting, you don't have to use those to figure out exactly what you want to do, but it can be helpful to narrow it down and do some research. So then when you're about 1 year out from graduating, you can then think about it a little more. You can spend more time thinking about what you want to do with your career, and you've already eliminated a few things from the list, but you don't need to spend third and fourth year figuring out exactly what you want to do.
I think too, that having those set times where you are focusing on your career, again, boundaries gives you some space to not worry about worrying the rest of the time.
Absolutely.
Emily, I love the perspective that you've brought about like how you can deal with the stress of graduate school and prevent it from kind of exploding into the other aspects of your life. But Kayla, I know on our PhD wrap-up episode, you talked about how stress from your real life, TM, kind of impacted on your graduate school experience. So can you give any thoughts or like what, do you have anything to share about navigating situations where stress from the real world is impacting you in graduate school and how to think about sort of the other side of that coin?
That's a very interesting question, especially because, you can listen to our previous episode, our PhD reflections episode, if you want to hear more, but the short version is that the personal life circumstances very much coincided with the typical slump, like literally the day after quals. So having that experience, I think, again, like these things are so different for each person, but at least for me, in some ways, I stressed about the slump less because I had a lot of perspective. Like, this is not me not getting this experiment to work was not the most stressful thing on any given day, so I didn't worry about it as much, for better or worse. You know, people could tell you, like, go take a walk, but like, if you're having some external circumstance, a walk doesn't necessarily relieve it. And that can be a time where you either need to talk to somebody else, sit in that, also recognize that it will be temporary, and then figure out a support system so that you can just balance what you're trying to do, reorient your goals, see if it's time to like take some serious time off, whatever steps need to be done. But I would say that that's not necessarily the same situation that we're talking about here, which, I mean, I have also experienced like the internal pressure, everything that we've talked about here, but that circumstance in of itself was a little bit different.
And I guess it just goes to show, like, you never know what other people are going through on top of what they're going through because of work or school.
So related to that experience, I mean, I've sort of described a situation that was outside of the purview of what we're talking about here, but maybe Emily, you can talk more about when is this outside of the normal PhD slump, and we're getting into circumstances that are above and beyond, and maybe it's time to look for bigger solutions than just trying to de-stress or setting up boundaries.
Absolutely. So if you're feeling really high levels of unmotivation, or you have external like family circumstances or things going on outside of graduate school, you can always go and talk to a therapist. And I mean, they're great. They're trained professionals to help exactly in these scenarios. So there are a lot of options if you're experiencing stress beyond the kind of internal pressure that, you know, high achieving grad students like to apply to themselves. And there are options out there.
Yeah, that's great. And I would say even if it is solely internal pressure, if you're still having a hard time dealing with that, that's still something you can talk to. I mean, a lot of universities have this as a service. A lot of jobs have this as a service. And I mean, it's beneficial to everybody because it does relate to you as a happy, healthy, productive employee. So, you know, it's something you can take advantage of and that take the time to do.
Yeah. And if you're, so graduate schools often have like the counseling and psychological services, which are usually free, at least in the beginning. And they also have counselors specifically trained for graduate students. If you are an employee, whether of a large company or a staff member at a university, a lot of times these programs are bundled under like the employee assistance program, and they can help match you with a therapist, or like if you have trouble finding childcare, they can help you with that. So employee assistance program, like your company, it's like a paid benefit, like your vacation time. And so you'd be sort of silly not to use what your company is paying for you to have for free. All right. With that,
I guess I would just like to say one last thing, which is to reiterate that there is normal and healthy stress, and that's a part of PhD. I don't think that we're putting this episode out to say like, oh, you can get rid of all of your stress from your PhD. Like, that's definitely not going to happen. But again, there's a balance, and hopefully you can find what level of, or find what types of stress you're comfortable sitting in, and what types of stress you can do something about, and what types of stress are not normal and you should get some help for. And also maybe it's good to reference that we do have an episode previously on mental health in graduate school. It's a little bit of a different focus than what we're talking about here. So, you know, check it out.
Well, then I think it's time for your favorite segment and mine, shameless plug time. So Emily, is there anything that you would like to plug? Past guests have talked about their lipstick routine, their surf instructor, their social media, their business, their favorite YouTube dance instructor.
Anything that you want to?
Yeah, quarantine hobbies, business. Quarantine meals. Anything that you don't want to leave without saying? Floor is yours.
I guess I'd like to, throw a plug out there for trusty Netflix. They, you know, all the good shows kept me company during the pandemic. I don't know. We don't have to shout out Netflix. I have nothing good.
No, shout out Netflix. Shout out password sharing. Like, I pay for my own Netflix, but not my own Hulu, not my own HBO.
Yeah, whenever we have a guest and they want to sign into something, we're like, you can sign in, but if you don't sign yourself out, we're not going to sign you out. You should know that. And that we have accumulated a plethora of subscriptions this way.
That's amazing. Oh, I do have one thing to plug. I want to plug The Office. Of course, it's a great television show, but through the pandemic, rewatched the entire Office, and it was hilarious and a blast the whole way through.
Do you listen to the podcast Office Ladies?
Oh my gosh, I love that podcast.
Oh, Today was the episode Toby's Last Day Part 1.
I loved it.
Oh, it's sort of like instead of Kayla and me being best friends talking about grad school, it's stars of The Office, Jenna Fischer and Ansley Kinsey being best friends talking about being on The Office. So it's like very similar vibes to this, but they have way more money and followers. So if you want to tell anyone that likes Office Ladies about this podcast or vice versa, appreciate.
Also, if they want to do a podcast with us, we'd be very open.
Listen. No, but my favorite part of Office Ladies is when they bring on people that were guest stars in one random episode and have left acting and are now normal people. So maybe we can get one of those to come on our podcast.
That would be awesome.
Oh my gosh. They have such great, just like random facts from the show. I learned so much about how they made this show. It's hilarious. And yeah. It's my favorite podcast after Double Shelix,
of course. Oh, Emily, so wow. Emily is one of our original listeners. Like when we first started Double Shelix, I checked the numbers and 12 people had listened. And I was like, that tracks because I've told like 12 people about this, our first episode. But then like 70 people had listened. And I was like, uh-oh, I don't know 70 people. Well, I do, but I haven't told 70 people about this. And then when our first episode had 70 listeners, I knew we had hit it big.
I think that, I don't know if this has any truth to it, but that does seem like the number that I've heard for when a podcast is going to stick versus not. But
is that 70 listeners?
Thanks, Emily, for sticking it out through those early episodes. Listeners, if you are just joining this podcast and you haven't listened to our earliest episodes, like, you know, maybe consider not.
Oh, but there's some gems back there. Like our qualifying exams episode is like is like our second most listened to. And I think it's because multiple people have told me that they've listened to our qualifying exam episode multiple times.
Oh, that warms my heart.
It's so stressful. Qualifying is so stressful. And everyone always tells you, don't worry, it's a good learning experience and you'll be glad you did it. But that means nothing to you at 6 a.m. when you're crying in front of a pile of unread PDFs.
That is so true. That is so true.
And like, yeah.
I hope it was like stressful, but I'm glad we talked about the third and fourth year slump too, because for me that was worse. I don't know how you all feel, but like quals was like a test you had to pass. And I was like, yeah, okay, I've aced many tests. Like, I can do this, right? But, like, then you have, like, this, like, infinite black hole of the PhD that follows. That was, like, harder. I'm like, I can pass tests. I can ace classes, but...
Right, but, like, how can you excel when no one tells you what to do?
Yeah.
It's thus the slump.
Abyss of, like, now till the end. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's why we're super excited to make this episode and have you as a guest.
Yeah, and listeners out there in the slump, I don't know, you can email us doubleshelixpodcast@gmail.com. But you can do it. And we all made it through. I think my slump was like from like the end of first year. Well, no. From the end of second year, which was my first year in the lab, until 6 months before I graduated.
Yeah, I'd say and fourth year. And then it started to fade in fifth year. And then I came to a point of acceptance.
And that's not to say that, you know, all the times during the slump are bad or unsuccessful. No. But it's just like, ugh.
You're like, what is happening?
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's it. Emily, plug for Netflix. Honestly, I think you are brave because all the other guests watch Netflix and it's meaningful to everyone in their life on a deep level, but no one else admits it.
Truth.
Kind of like how like in an icebreaker when people say their hobbies, I was once at one. Where multiple, like 7 people said trail running, including faculty. And I was like, there's no way that all of you actually go trail running more than twice a year.
You're like, okay. A very Bay Area answer. I will admit that I live in the Midwest and it's April as we're speaking. And so we've come out of a long winter. So there's not much to do beyond Netflix in the middle of winter in a pandemic. So
lean in. I wish you a summer of Netflix and being outside and seeing people and doing things.
I can't wait.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Emily, for being an amazing guest.
Please don't forget to rate and subscribe and tell your friends about Double Shelix, especially if they're in a slump. This is the episode for them / you. Thank you so much, and we'll be back soon with more excellent episodes.